So welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists on our Sunday morning meeting. On Sunday mornings, we are studying together articles from Robert Crosby. And we'll begin here with a summary of what exactly is the United Lodge of Theosophists. Well, what founded the single founding document and the only document that really continues to exist as a guidepost for who and what the United Lodge of Theosophists is our declaration. We simply are a group of volunteers, students of the philosophy of theosophy, who recognize the value of the teachings of HPB and Madame Blavatsky and Mr. William Q. Judge, the value of their teaching and the movement that was formed, which is an expression of their efforts. This started in the late 1800s. Each and every one of us as a student is invited to study and consider these ideas independently, independent devotion to the cause that they set in motion. And collectively, from time to time, we'll come together and as students investigate and learn and teach each other. There's no teacher per se, there's no priest, et cetera, but we're a group of students. So everybody's a student teacher in our own right. The basis for the theosophical movement is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. It's grounded in the teachings. It's not grounded in someone who's trying to influence or prioritize or distract in any way from what the true teachings of theosophy are. So those teachings, as we said, are the ideas that are recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. The Lodge, the United Lodge of Theosophists, regards as theosophists all who are dedicated to the service of humanity without regard to race, color, creed, religion, all these differences. And it welcomes to its association here in the Lodge anyone who chooses to fit themselves to be the better able to help and teach others along the lines of theosophy is certainly welcome to associate themselves with the movement. But the purpose of the Lodge in teaching these ideas is to help ourselves and each other learn that by application of the universal philosophical, theosophical ideas of theosophy will result in a greater conviction of universal brotherhood. That's the purpose behind the movement, is to teach principles that will result in a greater recognition, a profounder understanding of the universal brotherhood, regardless of condition. That's our purpose. So to do that, to carry out that effort, on Sundays we have meetings from 11 to 12. Here for the month of September, we are studying articles, actually letters, written by the founder of the United Lodge of Theosophists, Mr. Crosby, and today's letter is based on the idea of right attitude. No, excuse me, of the right use of the personality. Next week, next Sunday, will be the right use of faculties. Our meetings on Sunday are from 11 to 12. The doors open at 10:30. And then also on Wednesdays during the summer, we're continuing to study the Bhagavad Gita. On Wednesday evenings, the doors open at 5:15, and the library is open to the public. It's a reference library full of theosophical straight line literature. And that's from 5:15 to 7:15. Then the meeting on Wednesday evening in the Bhagavad Gita goes from 7:15 until 8:15. So this lodge is...
7:30 to 8:30.
Thank you. Right, so right, 5:15 to 7:15 is the library. And then the meetings are 7:30 to 8:30. So the lodge here and everywhere, all the lodges throughout the world, are sustained entirely by voluntary efforts of time, service, and money. It's not a money-making organization. We don't sell things for profit, but voluntary contributions are certainly welcome and needed to keep the lights on, to keep the doors open, right? That being said, we will now have this week's article summarized by a fellow volunteer, and then we'll spend the rest of the hour discussing the ideas, questions, and digging into what impersonality is all about, or right use of personality.
So the idea in this letter of Mr. Crosby's is the right use of personality. He starts off by commenting that theosophists speak about getting rid of the personality when they may not really know what exactly that means. Because without the personality, there would be no evolution. There is no contact between the spiritual and with the material world. So he puts forth the idea that maybe what theosophists are actually thinking about is their own perception of what the personality truly is. He puts forth a quote that says, instead of crushing out the animal nature, we must learn to fully understand that the animal and subordinate it to the spiritual. So as long as we know that, we can still be under the effects of the personality, but as long as we know it, it may not be as much of an issue for us. He uses the analogy of a rider and a horse, the horse being the personality, and how as long as one has control over the personality as a rider would a horse, things are going pretty well. But if you kind of lose track of what you're doing, then just like the horse can take over, your lower self, your personality can take over as well. And as he puts it, we are learning to ride, and success does not come at once. So we have to be patient about this. So there's a long quote in this in one of the paragraphs. Basically, we think the summary for it is that those of us that are committed to theosophy, we are the workers. But that doesn't mean, because we understand theosophy, that we cannot be taken, so to speak, by the personality, by our lower minds. So just as we have a personality that we have to keep under control, we have to be aware that others are going through the same issues as we are. So that if we're going to be kindly to ourselves, knowing this idea of the lower mind, the personality, we have to be understanding towards others as well. And we should not think ill of this personality, because he puts forth in the beginning, it is something that we need. This is how we learn our lessons. And we really like this last sentence of this paragraph. The masters do not look at our defects, but at our motives and our efforts. So if our motive is of a higher nature, even if we fail, as we kept trying, and it was for a good reason.
contributions or yes?
What the word personality, what does that, what comprises, what makes up the personality? What is
it? Right. So the question is, what is the personality? And what's helpful is to, when understanding the personality from a theosophical perspective, is to understand what it's also not. And so we could start off with St. Paul, who describes the human being as what? Spirit, mind, and body. And so there are those three aspects that he presents. So along those lines, if really those three can be expanded into, there's a sevenfold rather than a threefold constitution to the nature, okay, to the human nature. So those seven aspects of the human being are, some of them are permanent, part of the immortal soul. Some of them are temporary, used by the self-conscious immortal soul while we're here incarnated. So the personality is the part that is here today and gone tomorrow and used by the soul. So what are the components of the personality? The components are the physical body, the astral body, which is the framework, the metaphysical framework around which our physical body builds itself, we could say, or is built by us. There is the life force, the vivifying, the vitality behind the actions, thoughts, and motives that we have. So there's the physical, there's the vital, the life force, there's the astral, and then finally there is the desire nature. Sometimes we talk about the passions and desires. Sometimes we can just talk about how it's our feeling nature. And what's important to remember here is our desire nature, our passions and desires are actually the top of the totem pole for animals. Animals are driven by their passions and desires, not by rational thought, not by, I think I need to do such and such by the end of the week. No, everything is what is really a function of the desire. So too, human beings often allow their animal nature or the desire nature to take over, and that is something that plays into managing our own personality. So in that sense, the personality is those lower four. In another sense, we could also just consider the word personality and break it apart, which sometimes it's fun to do in theosophy. P-E-R, is by means of which, through which, the act through which, per. Sona has to do with what? Sound, like a sonogram, right? Well, if we consider the voice of the silence, what is the silence? The voice of the silence is some kind of sound. So then the personality might be that through which the sound expresses itself. So we have the immortal soul that uses the personality. It operates through the personality. And the message here in theosophy is we are all one, and our source is one. To the degree that we appear to be different and separate is the degree to which our personality has taken over and has tried to get us to believe we're different and separate, better or stronger or this or that, when actually when that happens, it's just a sign that we've given it the power to influence the higher rather than the higher controlling the lower. If the higher doesn't control the lower, the animal nature will control the immortal nature. Yes, in the red.
What part does gender and race and class play into the personality? Is that a strong component of the personality?
So these different conditions, let's call them all these different conditions of gender, class, race, all of this, does that play into the personality? Well, of course, it's all a part of the personality, and it's here today and gone tomorrow. As immortal soul, nobody's a boy, nobody's a girl. We simply are immortal beings. And so this skin deep perception of what or who we are, what is often whatever people look at in the mirror, you know, we identify ourselves as that. And our identification, with anything about our personality is a distraction from identifying with our true nature. It violates the human being to suggest that any human being is anything other than immortal soul. And so even the thought that we are other is a violent act in its sense. On the plane of thought, it's a violent act. Yes? So the contribution has to do with karma. What we are using today is the effect of causes we set in motion yesterday. And so karma plays in the sense of, I've built this thing. We've all built our own thing. Now, there is a distributive karma. We all participate in certain ways in the karma of our families, in the karma of the nation. We all participate. But right now we're looking at the individual personal responsibility, regardless of who we're participating with. The individual self-conscious soul knows upon reflection that whatever I'm dealing with, there's no one really else going to fix my problems, right? We can't turn it over to someone else. That would be what we call vicarious atonement. But rather, everyone is individually responsible for his conditions. So if we were born into this race of humanity and don't like the conditions, rather than blaming previous generations, we have to ask ourselves, what is it that I as an immortal soul did in previous lives that resulted in me being born into these conditions? Don't blame your parents. They didn't do it to you. You set up the causes so that you would be born into these conditions. This is the idea for consideration. Yes.
And going hand in hand with karma are the skandhas, which are those bundles of attributes that are electromagnetically, because we are electromagnetic beings, that are attracted to us when we are, when we're being born, in the process of being born. And so it's like they were held like in a safe deposit box if we want to make a material, if we want to materialize it, which we don't want to do too much, but they're ours and they come back to us. And whatever lessons we need to learn in any one life, because we can't learn it all in one life, that's what we end up with. But that doesn't mean that we have to be a victim of our circumstances either, because we're great beings of power and we can transcend that.
Thank you. So the contribution here has to, the last part of the contribution had to do with, really, we don't need to be the victims of consequences, even if we don't fully understand the issues that are in front of us. Personally taking responsibility, knowing that I have the will, the power, the intellect to learn what's going on and to fix it because it's mine, just taking on that attitude, right attitude, is empowering and gets you on the road toward fixing it. The opposite is, woe is me, look what they did to me, I'm born a poor, miserable sinner, and where do I end up? Probably in about the same condition as you started, unless you change your thinking, right? So, the first part of that had to do with skandhas. And just as we said, for sure, the personality is those parts of us that are here today and gone tomorrow. We move off into a new life as immortal soul to pick up where we left off in this path of evolution that we're all on together. Well, what we leave behind, it doesn't disappear. The patterns, the tendencies, the vibrations that we set up in the past, they're waiting for us. So when we return, we still, even though, yes, we are immortal, pure beings of light, we return with magnetic affinities, with the seeds of the effects from the causes that we set in motion. So we're born into this whole new soup of conditions, which was set up, some of it was set up in a previous life, but some of it might have been set up 1,000 lifetimes before, who's to say, maybe 10 lifetimes before. It all depends on how have we evolved along the way and what lessons are we ready for in this life. And it may not be, we may not be ready to experience the consequences of our last life. We may be ready to experience from previous lives in the back.
So then the best use of consciousness and mind is to focus on right now. Because we can't know the past fully, and we certainly control the future by what we're thinking and what's motivating us right now. So that's, we can't just let the personality run amok in the moment. It's not enough. I've heard students say, oh, I'm experiencing this, I'm just letting it go and I'm going to look at it. That's not really the goal in the moment, is it?
All right, so the issue that is brought up is, should we be focused on what am I doing about my conditions right now? Or otherwise, we're distracted from the moment. You know? Now, some people would say, here's the issue. Sometimes people will say, well, by today's standards, in the now. But that's not what theosophy means by in the now. In the now means, relative to everything else, there are certain things that always are now, which is the inner conscious being, and there are certain principles that never change, regardless of the conditions. So then, to restate that, the study of theosophy and universal principles gives us guideposts so that no matter what's going on in the craziness of the world, we have certain principles upon which to calibrate ourselves or to use as controls, so that when we look out into the world and see the craziness, we can check that. We can question it, test it, even verify it with others. It is said that no adept will act unless he sees the fruit of the action in the mind of another adept, and all he's doing is seeing, yes, I'm right, I'm pretty sure this is going to work, and that. So that's the idea. So being in the now, theosophically speaking, is sticking to principles, and isn't it wonderful when the great challenges of life comes that we can fall back on steady as she goes, regardless of the personal fears, the personal doubts, you know, what have I learned in the past that I know works? And what are the things that I've read, written by people who have demonstrated in their writings that are so much wiser to me? What can I consider, what universal ideas can I consider during these challenging times that will lift me out of, so to speak, these conditions and just steady as she goes? In the blue?
Well,
which paragraph?
Yeah.
Thank you for the contribution. So the comparison is being made between the steed, holding the steed, the reins tight in hand, controlling the personality, and there's a corresponding idea with the military unit, because the soldiers, the service people in a military unit, really need to be on the same page in terms of the mission. Now, there's an expression actually in the military, and that expression, interestingly, is no slack. And isn't that exactly referring back to the steed with the reins in hand? And so to keep the reins in hand, we have to not allow ourselves to be deceived by our emotions or our desire nature. And that speaks to things that are that will morally deplete or will deplete our moral stamina. People are good people. A young couple married, they have to protect that relationship, because things will happen in life that will create unnecessary temptations. And for those who are resourceful, for those who live a philosophic life, for those who take personal responsibility for their relationships, they're not going to allow into their lives, or they're at least going to recognize and fight things that are going to, like as we said, deplete their stamina, their moral stamina. Otherwise, what's a marriage for, right? Now, there was a hand, yes. Oh, yeah, there was a hand here, yes.
Just want to jump back to something that you explained a little earlier, and I'm going to try to paraphrase it the best I can, and then you were talking, I suppose, about the idea of karma reincarnation, that we choose to be here, that things that are happening now, maybe the result of something that we've done in past life. And then on the other side, you said, you know, we either have this or we are victims. You know, we consider ourselves victims and we blame our. And I guess I just, like, either or scenarios are really hard for me, because I think there's a lot of middle ground. And I think that there's a, maybe in terms of, you can explain a little bit more, some of the understandings that I've come to, been a study of, you know, philosophy, spirituality, but also science. I'm a lay person. I'm not going to say I'm, you know, a scientist, but in neurophysiology, when a person experiences either a physical or emotional trauma, it has an impact on the cognitive functioning of our brain. And therefore, it has an impact on that person's ability to steer the ship or bring the horse or however we see it. And I think sometimes when there's this either-or thing that gets presented, I think there's a kind of overriding or a neglecting to acknowledge that, and people will find ways to work with it. So it's not necessarily be about blame, but recognizing that certain things are impactful.
Sure.
And then how do we, you know, how do you address this, you say, sort of right attitude towards personality,
sure,
when somebody's cognition has actually been affected by something like trauma?
Thank you. So we started off with that sentence as having previously said that we choose to reincarnate.
Mm-hmm.
Careful about that. It's not that we choose to reincarnate. It's not that we choose where or how we're going to reincarnate, but rather that we reincarnate into conditions as a result of the choices we made.
Okay.
There's not a conscious decision, well, oh, Mary and Joe are over here, I'd like them as parents. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's not that. Okay. So everything is in the physical world is the effect of metaphysical world, the choices we made in the past. Now, well, what about this situation where, you know, is it reasonable to say we should always be fully personally responsible, or you're not because you're a victim, or is there a continuum there? Well, without getting into the neurological issues first, it's reasonable for all of us to ask the question, you know, wherever I am on my spiritual path, there's something inherent in me that knows I can continue on further. Well, if I know that I continue on further, and theosophy teaches that we didn't start as an amoeba and end up as a human being, but rather life happens like this, then inherently we know there's more to us than we see in the mirror, right? So it's a fair question to ask, what is my karma that limits me in whatever way I might be limited? What did I do in the past, the result of which is that I don't play the piano anywhere nearly as well as I can, even though I practice twice as much as my sister, right? So there's something, and the answer is, there's a purpose for why we are where we are and why we have to learn what we're going to learn. So if it's a condition that we're born into, we've set the causes up in the past. If it's a condition that's created, PTSD, you know, we're not saying, I mean, you know, theosophy without compassion is like, don't even open the book, don't bother, don't bother. Take personal responsibility for everything? Of course. Compassion for everything and everyone, from the beetle to the everything? Yes. So we're not pointing fingers. You know, to the extent that we judge each other, we're taught in theosophy, to the extent that we judge another for not being able to do this when really they should be, we're creating a magnetic field around us that attracts the very conditions that we're judging to ourselves. So that's a consideration. So yeah, theosophy without compassion is nothing. Fair? Okay. In the back, in the brown, yes, please.
So I'd like to go back to the analogy of the military application, where the sergeant's confronted with 50 individuals. Theosophically, the analogy breaks down, because in that scenario, those 50 individuals are becoming passive and obedient to an external leader for a good reason, for, you know, a really good reason in that circumstance. But in the daily practice of attempting to become a student of theosophy, the goal is to find that voice of leadership within, is it not?
So, right, so the concern here is, should we be part of a pack of drone bees and do what the queen says, or really are we individual? So, you know, for someone who's been in the military, we all know if the answer morally is no, no matter what the sergeant says, the answer's no. You have the legal authority to do that. So there's a lot to be said. There's a lot, and there's a lot of that goes on, thankfully. Otherwise, well, we're not going to go there. But theosophically speaking, we have to maintain, as we said, independent devotion. There's no priest telling us how to think. An independent sense of question everything, because things that come from without can be just as false as things that come from within the personality, because really the personality is external to the immortal soul. Our personality is the external world to the soul, right? And so we will let it go at that. There's in the blue and then over here. Yep. Thank you. So, all right, so Admiral Perry says we've met the enemy and he is ourselves. And Buddha said that greater is he who conquers himself than he who conquers 10,000 men, right? So it's a recognition of the challenges that every individual faces along that path. Yeah.
Examine the second paragraph when it talks about, instead of crushing out the animal nature, we must learn to fully understand the animal and subordinate it to the spiritual. One thing is, other thing is, someone may say that, reading this, they could interpret it that, well, we're really only animals. We're just more intelligent animals.
Okay, so yeah, so let's take a look at that. Instead of crushing out the animal nature, we must learn to fully understand the animal. Well, if we have a problem, will we ever find a solution to the problem if we don't understand the problem? What we find is when once we understand the problem, the solution's pretty often easy to come about. So understanding our problems in life is a big deal if we identify ourselves as this physical thing, here today, gone tomorrow, I think this way, they think that way. But if we stop and only recognize that for what it is, which is a temporary illusion, and we can change our perception of it, and we can change our identification with it, because that's not who we are. So in this sentence, instead of crushing the animal nature, use it. You know, the philosophers of the medieval times, didn't they always talk about transmuting, the transmutation, the refining of the senses, the refining of the desires? That takes effort. That takes control of one's environment. That takes discernment and discrimination of, I'm done with this. It's time to recreate, bring with what is reconstructable, right? But it's all, if it's all outside, which is what he's talking about here, the animal nature is outside, it's a matter of, you know, you can't use something that you don't have. We do have this lower nature. We have to, in terms of the theosophical movement, it's our duty to use that. We're told that the companions, the students, we promulgate the philosophy. We don't, you know, there aren't great spiritual beings at this stage of man's evolution who are going to come and shine their light on everybody, because they're going to get hung on a cross, right? So we have a purpose here. There's a follow-up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a follow-up is, but a common misperception is that we are descended from animals.
Mm.
And that, you know, but theosophy says no. We not only are not animals, we are not descended from animals. We're, you know, we have, that is part of our nature in our body, but we are not that, and we never were that.
The human being is not an animal. It has not evolved. There are principles working in the human quaternary, the lower four, the personality, that we have in common with animals, but we did not evolve from animals, and a deeper study of the philosophy can really open doors and windows to see what our relationship is to the animals, and it's a fun study, and that's what the library is for. Yes, in the brown?
So the process theosophically might be that there are certain habits and instincts that are very natural, certain tendencies in nature that are natural to the lower personality. And if we remain aware and we see these tendencies, we can change the focus. So instead of just treasuring one grandchild in a family, we can change the focus and turn it to a universal stance that forever and everywhere will we cherish every child that comes into our purview or sphere of influence.
So all right, so the contribution is here. Right, I mean, that in a nutshell is right use of personality. Are we here only to take care of our stuff because we love? Well, it's easy to love your family and it's easy to love your friends. But what about everybody else? Well, take the judgment out of it, and it's easy to love everybody else too. So the judgment's all about you, right? Right use of personality has to do with what we call impersonality. Right use of light and life and directing our, or inspiring or supporting non-judgmentally, not so much indiscriminately, with right discrimination, sure, but recognize, you know, the more we get to know who we are, our true immortal nature, the more we recognize what? The immortal nature of everybody else around us. The more I see about my own stuff, the less I recognize about your own stuff, and the more separate we become. So when we use personality as an expression of the immortality universally, then we see the value and the truth of it takes a village rather than this is mine, right? Wouldn't it be wonderful if, just to start off, you know, how about the neighborhood where all the moms
and dads
take care of all the kids in the sense of, okay, they're in my backyard, I didn't see this one coming, but now I'm outside, it's my turn, et cetera, et cetera, and blow that up higher, and blow that up beyond. So this impersonality is a big deal. Why? Because it's the biggest problem in the human race of what is personality versus impersonality. It all has to do with what is God. We hear around us on the TV, our friends talking about God. It's always a good thing to talk about God. God is a loving God, so to speak. But so often we hear about this personal God idea. The personal idea in the highest levels of theological or philosophical discussion is an inherent mistake. God doesn't love you better than anything else. God can't even. He's above. There's no sense of what it is. There's only knowing, if you choose to investigate, that deity is, and we can't define it. Anything we assign to it or any attribute that we consider with it is exactly what it's not. So ultimately, the deity is a principle in nature and impersonal principle in nature. Now, a helpful analogy of that is the sun. The sun shines on the earth impersonally. Some groups in certain areas of the earth get more sun than others. That's not because the sun likes them more than others. So the light and life from the sun, when two people walk outside, what happens? One person gets a beautiful tan in about a half hour, and another burns to a crisp in about a half hour. Is that because the sun doesn't like one and likes the other better? No. Take personal responsibility. It's because, well, this light skin of mine, I have to understand how it reacts to too much sun. That's the impersonal idea. So the light and life that is unlimited from our physical sun is a useful analogy for the impersonal nature, if we can say that, of the deific principle. As soon as we start to see that God is not deciding for me what I'm going to do and I act according to what God wants me to do because the priest said that's what God wants. Instead, wait a minute. Recognize everything, so to speak, the rays from the sun operate according to law. Understand the law, work with the law, and what happens? Everything grows. We become more in harmony when we work intelligently and with wisdom according to law. Things start to break down if we're not working according to law. And so these are the ideas. Yes, in the back. Term individual.
Mm-hmm. Undividedness. Now, it does not G, so to speak, with the term personality, which has a separatist idea about it. So the teachings and the literature is filled with ideas and suggestions and state
The first sentence of this contribution had to do with an important word to consider in the individuality. That, theosophically speaking, the individuality, theosophically speaking, is that immortal soul. So often we'll hear of the individuality as opposed to the personality. And we have to bear in mind when we speak of the immortal soul, gee whiz, it's, you know, of course. It's who we are. It's who we identify with. And soul is one. So we are on that plane, infinitely interconnected with everything and everyone that we see with our five senses. So the extent to which we accept the false teaching that we're different and separate, you know, it pulls us away from what's important, the basic unity of all of life, right? So the more we work on ourselves to teach ourselves that we are identical with that, the more the he and me is the he and thee, the more we recognize that and we start thinking and acting and feeling from that basis, do unto others as I'd have them, as we'd have them do unto you, as we'd have them do unto others as we'd have them do unto us. Am I saying it right? I'm getting cute. Thank you. Anyway, but the point is, that becomes the natural way to live. Yes.
Well, for many people, don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself might work.
Okay. Okay. And you're right, another one is, you know, St. Paul, you know, be not deceived, God is not mocked, that whatsoever we reap, whatever we sow, we shall reap. Well, similarly, whatever we're reaping, we've sown it in the past. We've created for ourselves, yes.
Because a lot of times when you really look at it, you'll take an individual. I've seen this, I've analyzed this with my own eyes. A lot of times people, they can initiate pain and initiate confusion when it comes in their direction. They can't take it, you know. It's like the one that initiate pain can't take the pain that they push out.
And so the theosophical view is what? There must be really some unseen chaos and pain in that person. Isn't he trying? He's what? He's expressing outwardly what's going on inwardly. So step one is compassion. Take it from there. Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, to stay on that, I mean, it's all on the spin that when somebody do mistreat you like that, that's how you really feel about yourself. Because when you want to hire, well, you know, when you, because that the whole thing is you treat people as you want to be treated. And that's just on a higher principle. When you know that you live more past than this lifetime, you continue to, you know, treat yourself because you're just that aware of who you are. That you know that if I'm loving you and loving you and loving you, I'm really loving myself. So when I'm treating you right, I'm treating myself right. And then that person that's in reflection, that come back to you, that now is mistreating you, it's just that they're truly mistreating themselves and they want to pay for the mistreatment.
Okay. And all along this idea of what's going to happen, what I do is going to come back to me, always need to keep in check, is it our spiritual soul that is guiding our thoughts and actions, or is it that animal principle that we were? Sometimes we're deceived by ourselves. What we do, or restated, the effect of the causes we put in motion more than anything else are a function of our motive. Why do we do it? So if we're doing something for our own personal, because I want this back, chances are we're not on the right path. Or maybe we could say chances are we're going to find that we have a lot to learn because things aren't working out the way we expect. And it's all about, am I using personality right? Am I doing this for me and mine? Or am I doing this for all of us. See what I'm saying? So it motive matters, but motive with knowledge matters. And theosophy, you know, motive, keep it in check. You have to analyze yourself. Only you know your own motive. And a lot of times we don't really know our motives without really, really questioning ourselves. However, when we act with right motive, we also need to act with knowledge. And that's the purpose of theosophy, to give us a universal basis of principles to rationally, impersonally discern, the difference between the personality acting personal and acting impersonally. Yes, there it ends, yeah.
We just love this because it's so poetic. At the top of the second page, at least on the handout, page 38, personalities are but the fleeting waves on the river of time caused by the friction of the waves of fortune. They are thy weakness and not thy strength. I just wanted to read that because it's so poetic, and it's true that our personalities, our little everyday, our difficulties, our frustrations with others, they're just fleeting waves on the river of time caused by the frictions of the waves of fortune. And fortune is another way for saying karma, really. It's not fortune as in someone has a fortune, but just as events and circumstances develop in our lives and in others.
So all this friction going on in these waves, which are big enough to knock over a supertanker in certain conditions, right? But and if that's our personality, well, what happens in this incredible hurricane storm when you go under the waves about 10 or 15 feet? Really not much is going on down there, is there? Similarly, if we get behind our personality into our inner nature and think and feel and operate from a steadiness of purpose and identify with ourselves as an unchanging spiritual being and not identify ourselves with this stuff, then we can impersonally view this stuff going on, and instead of reacting to stuff, we will decide responsibly how we're going to respond to the stuff rather than to knee-jerk react to it. Yeah.
Yeah, so the last sentence, to paraphrase, it's that the calm is not in the storm. The calm is not in the storm. It is calm. The strength is in the calm and not in the storm. And we think of Mr. Judge's final words. Hold, there must be calmness. Hold fast, go slow.
Go slow. Thank you. Yes, in the back. To regard what? Is there a hand in the back with a maroon? No? Sorry. Is that it? sir.
For those who want to experiment with the subject today, as far as personality is concerned, and the untrained personality, I think today is one of the first football games. Wait until it's over and observe if the hometown team wins or loses.
Yeah. So when it comes to personality, the history of the Theosophical movement was very affected by personalities. Once Mr. Judge and HPB, the two co-founders of the Theosophical movement, whose purpose was to provide the message, to write the teachings, not their own, but teachings that they culled universally from all over and from all time, they were guided on how to assemble these ideas. And they presented them. These Theosophical ideas are not the ideas of Mr. Judge or HPB. They're not. But they were presented as an impersonally dispassionate philosophy to be accepted or rejected by any self-conscious thinking human being, and everyone can understand the principles of the philosophy. The challenges that happened in the Theosophical movement is when you had some people say, well, they're gone, I'm in charge, I'm smarter than you, I control this, and it was a mess. From out of the chaos was born the United Lodge of Theosophy. And here at the ULT, for over 100 years, that which has crumbled hasn't made it. It still exists in form, but they do not know the philosophy. This is a fact. They talk about psychic stuff. They talk about all sorts of garbage. It's not theosophy. But at the ULT, we stress what we call impersonality. Sometimes the idea of impersonality is misunderstood as being just cold and impersonal. No, you don't hide behind anything. You just experience and interact with everybody on an impersonal basis. Focus on the philosophy. It's not about you. It's about impersonally presenting ideas, impersonally discussing ideas. You know, that doesn't mean, I mean, we have to use our personalities to do that, or it's never going to happen. But the priority has to be placed on the philosophy, and Mr. Crosby has a couple things to be said about that. Others preach a doctrine of impersonality, which takes everything human out of life and makes it of it a cold negation. But this doctrine of impersonality, it has no patience with evolution. Impersonality from the ULT perspective, It's not talking about this or that. It's not silence. It's not hinting or insinuating about things. It's not being repulsed or pretending to be impulsed. And it's not diplomacy trying to come across when really you're being ambitious about something. Impersonality is freedom from the personality. None of us are going to attain that in this life, so we have to use what we have. For practical purposes, if we are developing the child heart, if we are learning to love things that are beautiful, if we are becoming more honest and plain and simple, if we are beginning to sense the sweet side of life, if we are getting to like our friends better and extending our circle of friends, if we ourselves are expanding in sympathy, in compassion, if we love to work for theosophy and don't ask for position as a reward for it, if we're not bothering about whether we're personal or impersonal, don't worry about it, just be. This is traveling on the path of impersonality. So much for the individual. So with that, our meeting is adjourned. Our Wednesday night Gita class is at 7:30. We'll see you there.